Did you ever wonder what it takes to climb Mount Everest or Kilimanjaro? Well, here with us this morning with some firsthand experience is Dr. Thomas Welch, professor and chair of the Department of Pediatrics and the medical director of Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Welch. Thanks for coming in today.
Nice to be here, Linda. Nice to talk about something other than pediatrics for a change.
I'm sure. So I gather you've recently summited Mount Kilimanjaro. Wow, what a feat.
Yeah, it was exciting for a number of reasons, one of which was I did it with my daughter. We were in Tanzania, Africa in February and took a couple weeks to climb.
Magnificent. So this was in February, just this past February?
That's right.
Oh, wow. How long did it take you to prepare for something like that?
Well, Beth and I, my daughter who climbed with me, really are pretty active anyway and are generally folks who get a lot of exercise. So we, other than increasing our aerobic activity, biking and running a little bit, we didn't do too much differently than what we typically do.
When did you start climbing? You must have started a long time ago to attempt something like Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, I actually got my start as a teenager and was actually a hike up Mount Colden in the Adirondacks, which is still one of my favorite peaks, not only because it's beautiful, but because I have wonderful memories of getting started at that age.
I'm sure. What moved you to decide to climb?
I think the initial climb was just I had a few friends that did this sort of thing and had an opportunity. Somebody who was going into the Adirondacks asked me to come along. But then once I experienced it, I realized it was me. It did a lot for me, and that was the reason that I continued to do it. So it was the initial step was one that I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but once I had done it, I was hooked.
It's interesting. For many people, one would think that it's actually achieving the goal and being at the top of some great mountain that would be the kind of the draw. But I imagine if you keep climbing like that, there really must be something in the process as well, it's the journey and not just the end.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, my daughter really kept reminding me that the greatest part of climbing Kilimanjaro for us was not the summit, but the experience of doing something together. And that's truly the case. Anyone who spends a lot of time in the woods, not just climbing mountains, recognizes that one always doesn't achieve the specific goal, whether it's the remote lake that you wanted to get to or the summit. There may be reasons of safety. There may be reasons of remaining time. There may be reasons of weather that you're not able to get to what some people might consider the goal. But for me, just the experience of travel with the idea of a goal but not the necessity of it is what really motivates me.
You know, that's so interesting because it's almost poetic. It's almost like a metaphor for life, that we may, you know, whatever that goal that we may set for ourselves, that the journey itself is really where the prize is, it seems to me.
Absolutely.
So what else have you climbed, or what else are you contemplating climbing?
Yeah. Well, it's actually not just climbing. I have sort of a life in the outdoors and have hiked throughout the Adirondacks. I've spent quite a bit of time in Alaska. I actually am a certifying instructor for an outdoor education organization and have taught mountaineering classes in Alaska. I've spent quite a bit of time in Montana as well. A few years ago, I was down in the Andes. So these were all very different environments, but they had the one commonality of being in a wilderness area. And I think beyond just the idea of being on a summit, the idea of being in a wilderness where one is not surrounded by electricity, by lights, by cell phones, by internet, that is really, in this day and age of continuous connectivity, it's one of the things that I really find so invigorating about outdoors.
I would agree, and there's something very peaceful and spiritual almost in being in close to nature, which sounds like you have that same experience.
Absolutely, and it's easy to see when one experiences the wilderness why many ancient religions were actually evolved out of people in the wilderness and getting close to nature.
Do you have any goal? Well, we've talked about goals, but do you have any other aspirations in terms of climbs you'd like to take going forward?
Not right now. I spend quite a bit of my summers in the Adirondacks. We have a cabin up on a lake in the Adirondacks, and they're certainly one of the most beautiful areas that I've ever been in. Again, that may just be because it was the first mountain I climbed was in the Adirondacks. So summering in the Adirondacks and having an opportunity to hike and climb there is something I hope I'll always be able to do.
Well, you know, with the warmer months coming ahead, I'm sure there are a lot of our listeners, a lot of people in this area who also share that passion for climbing in the Adirondacks. And clearly with your experience, your training in terms of helping people to be prepared, what kinds of tips or advice would you offer to people in terms of getting ready for this next season coming up?
Well, that's a great question, and actually some of your listeners may know I write a column on wilderness activity for Adirondack, the magazine of the Adirondack Mountain Club, and one of the articles I wrote on that a while ago was what one needs to do to prepare for a trip like this. And what I said there, I think I would reinforce, there really are three things. The first is heart and lung conditioning. In order to hike long distances and to climb, one has to have the system of the heart and lungs working together in a way that gets oxygen to muscles and makes one feel comfortable. Heart and lung conditioning can be done in a number of different ways, but what we usually recommend is 30 minutes a day of aerobic exercise at least 4 days a week. Now, aerobic exercise is things, probably the best way to explain it, that gets your heart beating, gets you breathing fast, and gets you sweating. There are more formal definitions of it, but heart beating fast, breathing fast, and sweating is aerobic exercise. You can get it by jogging, you can get it by very fast walking, by cycling, playing tennis, that sort of thing. Not stop and start exercise, but continuous exercise. So that's heart and lung conditioning. The second is leg strength. You can have all the heart and lung conditioning you want, but if you don't have strength in the legs to help carry yourself and your pack up over the peak, you're going to get really sore. The leg muscles that are the most important are what we call the quadriceps. They're the muscles in the front of the thigh, the biggest muscle group in the body. There are a number of ways that you can work on the quadriceps, but actually stair climbing is one of the best ways to do that. So if you don't have an opportunity to walk on hills in your neighborhood, simply walking up to your office of three or four floors rather than taking the elevator is a very good way to do that. And the final thing is foot care. Interestingly, the most common reason that people wind up having to abort a hike is the development of blisters. It's not just some significant, worrisome backcountry injury. It's just the simple blister. So I think it's very important that one make sure that the skin on the feet is really strengthened. There are a number of ways of doing that. Walking around outdoors barefoot is one way that one can do it. It's also very important that whatever shoes one is going to be wearing in the backcountry, you wear them around the house or at work for a few days before, just to make sure that your feet are going to be used to them.
How about things like altitude training? I don't want to run out of time, but is that a crucial thing to do as well?
There's not an awful lot one can do to ready for altitude. Interestingly, in the Northeast, where all of the peaks are generally under 5,000 feet, and there are a few of 6,000 feet in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, altitude problems are not really a problem. Altitude illness doesn't become something you worry about until you're above 8,000 feet, and that usually means in the West. So around here, if you just make sure you have heart-lung conditioning, you'll be all right.
Well, thank you so much for all this very, very valuable information and for being such an inspiration, clearly, to people who can only imagine what glories lie ahead if they get a chance to get out there in the woods and climb those mountains and see these beautiful vistas. My guest has been Dr. Thomas Welch. He's the professor and chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, and he's also the medical director of Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air, so please stay with us.